the chapter summary. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 13, entitled The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this final chapter, Sri Sita Goswami describes the length of each of the Puranas, along with the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, its purpose, how to give it as a gift, the glories of such gift-giving, and the glories of chanting and hearing it. The total corpus of the Puranas includes 400,000 verses, 18,000 of which constitute Srimad Bhagavatam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, instructed Brahma in this Srimad Bhagavatam, whose narrations produce detachment from matter and which contains the essence of all Divedanta. One who gives a Srimad Bhagavat Purana as a gift will attain the highest destination. Among all the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best, and it is the most dear thing to the Vaishnavas. It reveals that spotless supreme knowledge accessible through the Paramahamsas. And it also reveals the process by which one can become free from the reactions of material work, a process enriched with knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Having thus glorified the Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami meditates upon Lord Sri Narayan as the original absolute truth, who is perfectly pure, free from all contamination, devoid of sorrow, and immortal. Then he offers obeisances to the greatest yogi, Sri Sukadeva, who is non-different from the absolute truth. Finally, praying with true devotion, Suta Goswami offers respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Hari, who takes away all misery. Suta Uvacha. Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruta Stunvanti Divyaistave. Vedai Sangha Padda Kramopanishade Gayantiyam Samaga.
Vedai Sangha Padda Kramopanishade Gayantiyam Samaga.
Dhyana Vastita Tangatena Manasa Pasyanti yam yogino.
Jnana vasita tangatena manasa. Pasyanti yam yogino.
Yasyantam na vidu sura sura gana. Devaya tasmai namah.
Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Mauta Stumbanti Divyaistava.
Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Mauta.
Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, unto that personality whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, and the Maruts praise by chanting transcendental hymns and reciting the Vedas, with all their corollaries, Pada Kramas and Upanishads, to whom the chanters of the Samveda always sing, whom the perfected yogis see within their minds after fixing themselves in trance and absorbing themselves within him, and whose limit can never be found by any demigod or demon, unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead I offer my humble obeisances. Tasya granam jana shakaya chakshuram nilatam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So we're finally the last chapter of the Bhagavatam. Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a real landmark chapter. This is the last chapter in the Bhagavatam. The previous chapter was a summary of the Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled Glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And which is very appropriate because the essence of devotional service is glorifying, serving by glorifying. We glorify with our words, which is what we're most familiar with when we hear the word glorify. But glorify, I was actually looking at the definition, the word glorify, a week or two ago. And it's actually a very deep word because it's not simply extolling or singing the praises of someone or something. It's reflecting the essence of something in glorification of that object of worship. So we appreciate so much what we see and what we worship, what we serve, that we are getting in touch with our own lacking, our own wanting. That there's something, we're deficient. We're not the original, we're the reflective. And in, through that glorification, we're actually invoking the blessings of the object of worship so that we can imbibe the qualities and the essence of that object within ourselves. That's why Srila Prabhupada said, don't try to become God, but try to become godly. And that's the greatest glorification to Krishna, actually. I remember hearing in a class once, my Guru Maharaj was saying that it's one thing to say, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. But real glorification is when we follow his instructions, we follow his example, and we please him by imbibing his qualities, his example, his mercy, ourselves, becoming like him. Of course, we never can become like Prabhupada. But that is the most pleasing to our Guru Maharaj, Krishna, is to follow in their footsteps. So this chapter is devoted to glorifying the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this verse that we just read talks about Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Acharyas make the point that everyone mentioned in this verse, they're rulers to some extent. Some greater than the others, but they're all rulers. And Krishna is compared to the emperor. So you may have many, many rulers, but when all the rulers come together in the front of the emperor, they're dwarfed by the magnificence and the greatness and the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But at the same time, that they're dwarfed and that they're quote-unquote put into place, at the same time, they're given significance, all of these rulers, in the face or in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's actually explained that they're counted. They're actually counted. Like you hear the analogy. You have so many zeros. And we can count so many zeros, but unless there's a one in the beginning of those zeros, they're worthless. So when all these rulers come together and praise the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's the one. And all the rulers are the countless zeros. And As soon as the one is there, then all the zeros can be counted. So that's the analogy that our acharyas give us. And immediately after this verse, the Sutta Goswami gives the analogy of... actually, he brings up the topic of Gurmadev, Gurma Avatar. And describes the analogy of the churning of the ocean in relation to the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam, our acharyas explain that the Bhagavatam, of course we all know the Bhagavatam, the second verse of the Bhagavatam, which is the second verse. Kick out the cheating religion, dharma prajita kaitavatra paramavanira matsaranam satam. It kicks out cheating religion. That's at the very outset of the Bhagavatam. It makes it very clear that Srimad Bhagavatam is about bhakti. It's not about any other upadharma. But the acharyas actually explain that within the Bhagavatam contains everything. Jnana, vairagya, knowledge, detachment, all types of yoga, everything's included. So how is it possible, on the one hand, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it's saying we kick out the cheating religion. And at the same time, throughout the whole Bhagavatam, we find everything, not only bhakti, but we find all paths towards God. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that the reason why is because it is, of course, the principle of yukta vairagya is very crucial, pivotal concept in bhakti. That bhakti is all-embracing, it's all-encompassing. Nothing exists outside of bhakti. Actually, in the center of the world of the universe of all existence is Radha Krishna and that lotus flower with the countless concentric circles of lotus petals just turning and turning and turning, just totally bringing the whole creation, material and spiritual, and putting that into motion. So bhakti is everything, but it's all embracing also. It's all encompassing. It includes everything. But the difference is between those practitioners of jnana and the jnana of the bhakti yogi is that the bhakti yogi doesn't depend on jnana. The bhakti yogi only depends on bhakti. And we hear in their scriptures that jnana, vairagya, detachment, these aren't separate from bhakti, but they're symptomatic. They're not causal. There's no causal relationship, but they're symptomatic. That when there's bhakti, you automatically have detachment. It's not that you have to strive for detachment separately. You automatically have jnana. You have full knowledge. Not that you have to separately strive for knowledge. So throughout the Bhagavatam, in that spirit, that everything is contained within bhakti, Srimad Bhagavatam has everything, contains everything. The example that's given in that next verse about the churning of the ocean of milk is very appropriate. It's described how during the churning of the ocean, the nectar is the end result of that churning. And that nectar is compared to the Bhagavatam. And you know how in the beginning of the pastime, Krishna, he instructs the demigods in Brahma, put all the creepers and grasses and herbs and everything into the milk ocean before you churn. So all of those ingredients that are put inside of the ocean of milk, when it's churned, you get the Bhagavatam. And so what are those ingredients? Those ingredients are all the other scriptures. Just like here in this verse, we're explaining how that Krishna is the emperor, he's the king. And you know, we have the governor, we have the mayor, we have the senators and the congressmen, you have all these different levels. And Krishna is the center. In the same way, all of these other scriptures, the Smriti Shastras, the Puranas, everything, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the emperor and is the essence that's churned, it's the nectar, the end result of churning of the ocean of milk. But there's actually a really deep lesson in the story of Kurma Avatar. I was just reading the other day about this lesson. And it's very enlightening, actually. One second. So in his commentaries, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries, in the eighth canto, when the whole pastime of the churning of the ocean of milk is described, at nearing the very end of that chapter, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he highlights the lesson to be learned from this pastime. And the point that he makes, let me see if I can get the description here. From Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he said, what is the difference between the demigods, the devatas, and the demons? So he's asking this question. They made a truce, they're working together. So what is the difference? Why did the devatas get the nectar and why did the demons not get the nectar? Everything was exactly the same. The place, they were in the same place. They were in the same, it was the same time. The means was the same. Mandara Mountain, Vasuki, the ocean of milk. The means was exactly the same. The materials used were exactly the same. Right? In the beginning, they had put all the creepers and herbs inside the ocean of milk. The activity, exactly the same. Churning the ocean of milk. Same activity. The determination was exactly the same. They're both striving for the nectar. Devatas and the demons. It's not that they had two separate goals. No, the goal was exactly the same. They wanted the nectar. There was one difference. The devatas, they took shelter of Krishna. They took shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the demons did not. That is the only difference between these two groups. And I found it very enlightening hearing about that lesson, because every time I read this pastime, I'd always think to myself that every step of the way, there's a problem. Every step of the way, there is a big catastrophic problem during the churning of the ocean of the milk pastime. And every step of the way that there's a big catastrophic problem, Krishna appears. Have you ever counted how many times Krishna appeared during that pastime? I tried counting a few times, but I lost count. It was just too many times. Every other verse, Krishna, came on the back of Garuda. He came to the demigods and gave him the instructions of what to do. And as soon as they tried to, carry Mandara Mountain, they started getting crushed, and then he came and lifted and put it on the back, and then they came to the ocean of milk, and they started churning. And then what happened? Then it started to sink, and then first, Kurma Avatar came, the turtle came, and the turtle incarnation came, he lifted it up, and then what happened? Just because the devatas were on the tail side of Vasuki didn't mean they didn't get burned. I was just reading this morning, they both got burned, the demons and the demigods. They both got burned by the fire emanating from the mouth of Vasuki. So they couldn't do anything. So Krishna had to come again. And standing on top of the mountain, he actually churned the ocean of milk himself. Then what happened? What other obstacles? It's just innumerable. And of course, oh my gosh, the hala poison. I mean, what more obstacle can you imagine than the hala? I mean, it's described that that hala poison was so powerful, it's so destructive, that one drop of it is enough to destroy the entire universe. The only reason why it didn't was by the arrangement of the Lord, that poison was spreading very slowly. It's like slow, like you know how lava, like it goes like really slowly. The only reason why that hala poison didn't destroy the entire universe is because it was going slowly. And of course, Lord Shiva, he drank the poison. Of course, you know, Shiva, we hear from Brahma Samhita that Shiva's non-different from Vishnu. He comes. And actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he makes the point that, of course, Vishnu could have very easily rectified that problem like he did every other time in that pastime. But he wanted to give glory to Lord Shiva. He wanted to make his devotee famous. So he, it was his arrangement that Lord Shiva drank the hala poison. What other obstacles did they have? Ah! Dhanvantari came. Of course, I'm missing probably a whole bunch of them. But Dhanvantari came with the nectar, and what happened? The demigod snatched the nectar. Huh? What did I say? I said the demons snatched the nectar. Asuras. I'll stick with one language. I'm going back and forth between English and Sanskrit. So, asuras. So they snatched the nectar. But it's interesting though. Every time there's an obstacle, every single time, the devatas immediately approach the Lord, saying, "Please help us." Every single time, you'll read that in the Bhagavatam. The devatas, "Please, what do we do now? Oh my gosh, help!" Every time. And when they didn't try to solve the problem with using their own intelligence, using their own endeavor. They surrendered. They were totally surrendered to Vishnu. Vishnu orchestrated this entire thing. So when the demons stole the nectar, the devatas went to Vishnu, "Help us. What do we do now?" The whole point of this whole thing was to get the nectar. And then the Vishnu came again. And he came not only to solve the problem, but also to pacify them, saying, "Don't worry, by my Maya, great Maya, I will rectify the whole situation." And so he came as Mohini Murti. And we all know what happens there. Krishna, actually, the Acharyas explain in that pastime how Lakshmi Devi was having some form of transcendental pride, that she's so beautiful. And Krishna says, "Just see how beautiful I can become." So he came as the Mohini Murti. And Mohini Murti is explained that that avatar of Krishna was so beautiful. Because you know, during the churning of the ocean of milk, Rama, Lakshmi Devi came, right? But they never said what they said about Mohini Murti. Sukadeva Goswami said that Mohini Murti was so beautiful, it's impossible to describe. Those were the exact words. Impossible to describe. But he didn't use those words for Lakshmi Devi. And then the final kind of icing on the cake is that Mohini Murti was able to bewilder Lord Shiva. Now, that is not an ordinary thing. So that's another form of obstacle. But Lord Shiva, he surrendered to Vishnu. He was shameless. He had no shame whatsoever, not a drop of shame. Whatever happened, he did it in front of everyone, all the celestials, whatever he did. And he was shameless. He said, "See how wonderful my Lord is. That he can bewilder even me." This is amazing. This is so beautiful. I'm so happy this happened to me, because I can use this pastime to glorify my Lord, Shri Krishna. So I was just thinking how, just bringing it home to our lives, is there's so many levels of devotional service. The first level is the Gyata Sukriti, where we perform devotional service and we're not even aware of it. The next level is maybe, perhaps, we're told to do devotional service, or asked to do devotional service, and we engage in that service, but begrudgingly. We're like, what do I have to do this service? I don't want to wash the pots, I don't want to... You're kind of like, well, you do it, but you're kind of begrudging. Or you don't even do it, which is even worse than that. But it's better that you do it begrudgingly than not doing it at all. And then the next level is your spiritual master instructs you to do A, B, and C. And you do the service as a dharma, as your duty. Yes, I'm going to do it as a duty. And then the next level is you do it because you want to do it. You don't want to do anything else. Devotional service is all you want. And then I had this realization that the ultimate level of service is when you see devotional service as the rarest, most valuable jewel in all of creation. And that not only do you want it, not only is it the only thing you want, but you're begging for it. You're begging for that service. To the extent where you're asking permission, can I serve? Not how can I serve? We always think, how can I serve you, Prabhu? Right? How can I serve you? But even deeper than that is, can I serve you? Can I serve you? You want that permission. Please allow me to serve you. And then we can talk about how I can serve you. In this verse, the first verse, there's actually, our acharyas actually explain, there's so many deep points in this chapter. Very profound points in this chapter. In this verse, it talks about, and this is not coincidental, it talks about Vedas, the Vedas, their corollaries, and the Upanishads. Now, it is commonly understood that the Vedas and the Upanishads, which is the Brahmana portion of the Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Vedanta Sutras, which is considered the cream of all the Vedas, it's commonly understood that these are all apaurusheya, which means it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not indirectly, but directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in this chapter, twice, I actually looked at this yesterday, two times, and two different verses in this chapter, and not even the same chronology, in two different places in this chapter, it is specifically said that Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam, directly spoke the Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. After class, if you can, I can show you the two verses. It says directly, Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam directly to Lord Brahma. Now, why is this such an important point? There's a pastime many, many years ago, hundreds of years ago, which brings to light, because as the Vaishnavas, we automatically understand the Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana, it is the topmost, there's nothing higher. Bhagavatam is it, the end of all ends, right? But it's kind of sometimes hard to believe that most people don't believe that. in the Western world, around the world, and even in India, it is actually not common knowledge, believe it or not. To such an extent that acharyas have written literally hundreds of thousands of pages of commentaries explaining scientifically the evidence that Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost. So this past time, we all know this pastime, it's a very famous pastime. In the kingdom of the king of Rajasthan, I don't remember his name, 500 years ago, during the time of Baladev Vidibhushan Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the king was actually initiated within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. But the Sri Sampradaya was very powerful. The followers of Ramanujacharya were very powerful all over India. They're so powerful because we know that in Vedic culture, Brahmanas are higher than the Kshatriya class. So just because the king was initiated in the Gaudiya Vaishnava line doesn't mean that he has any power. The Brahmanas in the Sri Sampradaya said, we don't care if you're the king. This Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is not bona fide. And because you don't have a commentary, your own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So the king started getting nervous. He's like, oh my God, what do we do? So he sent a messenger and he said, this is what's happening to Vrindavan, to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He was very old at the time. So he sent Baladeva Vidibhushan. He came and he said that Jiva Goswami scientifically proved in Tattva Sandarbha that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Of course, Baladeva Vidibhushan, it was very convincingly scientifically presented it. But they weren't satisfied. So he agreed to write the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So when he went back to Vrindavan, which is not too far from Rajasthan, he went to his Ishtadev, Govindaji Mandir, and he said, he basically asked Govindaji, please help me. I am supposed to write this commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. How in the world is this possible for me to write this? So in that night, in a dream, Govindaji came to him and said, don't worry, I'll write the entire thing. You just have to write it down. I'll tell you what to write down. You just write it down. So Baladev was very happy, and he wrote down the entire Govinda Bhashya, is what he called it later. Govinda Bhashya means the Bhashya is Bhashya. What does Bhashya mean? Spoken by, right? The what is dictated in Bhashya? So whatever Govinda told me, I wrote it down, and that's Govinda Bhashya. So you can see let me just finish the story. So when Baladeva Vidibhushan presented Govinda Bhashya to the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they were so impressed that they wanted to take initiation from Baladev. Not only did he say, yes, you're bona fide Sampradaya, but he said, we all want to take initiation from you, Baladeva Vidibhushan. And Baladeva Vidibhushan, he said that no, there's four Sampradayas. And you are in Sri Sampradaya is a bona fide Sampradaya. It would be an offense to initiate you. The reason why I'm bringing up this story and the point that I'm trying to make is that this distinction between Apaurusheya and the other scriptures is a big deal. And it was such a big deal that they wanted the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is unanimously accepted as Apaurusheya, that it was being presented by Krishna himself. So, the other point in this chapter, which I mentioned before, is that Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam. In the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, Dena Brahma Hridya Adi Kaviye, Krishna spoke this Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. The second canto, the Chatur Sloki, the four verses, which is the seed verses of the entire Bhagavatam, was Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma. And in many places in the Puranas is explained that Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam. And this, our Acharya's comment, make this commentary. The other point that the Acharyas explain, that's in the verses itself, is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from the Gayatri Mantra. Now, that's also a really big deal. Because it is universally accepted the Gayatri Mantra is the mother of all Vedic literature. It's like the seed of all seeds. To illustrate the importance of the Gayatri Mantra, it's described in the Brahma Samhita, what happens at the dawn of creation. In the very beginning, when we are on the story, Brahma comes out of the world, lotus from the navel of Lord Vishnu, and he's bewildered by material existence. And in the Brahma Samhita, it's explained that Saraswati gives him the Gopal Mantra, Gleam Krishnaya Govindaya Bhujanavaya Swaha. So he meditated on that and heard the sound of the flute from Goloka Vrindavan. And the sound of the flute took the form of Kama Gayatri. Gleam Kama Devaya Vidamaya Pushpabhanaya Dhimi. He heard that. And through that Gayatri, and of course included that in that is the Brahma Gayatri. And from that Gayatri, his entire realization of his Siddha Sarup and Goloka Vrindavan was revealed. Chintamani Prakarasad Masukalpa Vriksha. If he had just received the impersonal realization, how would he have composed those prayers? Chintamani Prakarasad Masukalpa Vriksha. You know the meaning of those verses. It's a description of Goloka Vrindavan. So, in the last chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that Lord Brahma was fearful of material existence when the Bhagavatam was spoken. And in these Puranas, it's explained, in the exact verses in these other Puranas, it's explained that that scripture, in which contains the Gayatri Mantra in the beginning and the end and explains the pastime of Vritrasura, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from the Gayatri Mantra. So, not only is the Bhagavatam apaudasheya, spoken by Krishna himself, not only is the Bhagavatam non-different from the Gayatri Mantra, which is the mother of all Vedas, chronologically speaking, in the very beginning of time, before anything happened, the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. Because of that verse, we know that actually Lord Brahma, when he was fearful of material existence, that he was fearful because he was desiring liberation. But after he heard the Bhagavatam, he desired prema. And because he desired prema, after he heard the Bhagavatam, he was able to speak the entire Brahma Samhita, those prayers to Krishna. So now we have proven that Srimad Bhagavatam is apaudasheya, right? We have proven that the Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from the Gayatri Mantra and is actually the essence of even Vedanta Sutra, the Gayatri Mantra. So you have the Vedas, the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutras, and then you have Gayatri Mantra and Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non-different from the Gayatri Mantra. We also have proven scientifically that chronologically, the Srimad Bhagavatam was the first scripture ever spoken from the dawn of creation. We've scientifically proven that. Now, the Acharyas explain, the Srimad Bhagavatam, not only is it all of that, it is also the most important scripture. Because it's explained in the second canto, when all the avatars are listed, Krishna included, Krishna is included in that list of avatars, that very famous verse, Eti Cham Sakala Pumsam, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. They just talked about Krishna, and why would they say it again? Why is Krishna's name repeated again at the very end when he's already included in that list? Because Krishna is the source of all of these incarnations. Now, if you look in this last chapter of the Bhagavatam, text 4 through 9, it explains every single Purana and the exact number of verses in every Purana. And in the very beginning, it says, the Srimad Bhagavatam of 18,000, Shiva Purana of 24,000, Narada Purana of 25,000, Markandeya Purana of 9,000, on and on and on. And at the very end, the last thing that Sutta Goswami says, 18,000 of these once again belong to the beautiful Bhagavatam. Why would you repeat yourself? He just said the same exact thing earlier in that same section. That means that out of all the Puranas, the Bhagavatam is the most important. Now, not only is it the most important, not only is it Apurusheya, not only is it chronologically the first spoken, not only is it non-different from Gayatri and Vedanta Sutra and the Brahmana portions of the Vedas, and even greater, not only is it all of that, it explains the highest knowledge. Prema Bhakti Rasa. Why? What is the last verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Can you say the last verse? Do you know the last verse? This is amazing. Thank you. The last verse of the Bhagavatam. Nama Sankirtana Yasya Sarva Papa Pranasanam. Harinam Sankirtan. Which is the entire essence of the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. The whole nectar of devotion. Everything is encapsulated here. Raso Vayi Saha. All the rasas are included. Now, our acharyas explain that it's scientifically proven that it shows the highest rasa, because the only avatar that's mentioned in this last chapter is Kurma avatar. No other avatar is mentioned here except Kurma avatar. Why is that significant? In rasa vichar, in discussions about rasa, it's explained that Kurma represents the Adbhuta rasa, which is the rasa of wonderment. Vismaya rasa, wonderment. And this rasa of wonderment is the one rasa that is like acts like a magnifying glass on all other rasas. So whatever is the sthayi bhava, the five primary rasas, the seven secondary rasas, this adbhuta rasa acts like a magnifying glass to every other rasa, and it shines more and more bright, more beautiful. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained that when all the rasas simultaneously appeared in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the form of Kurma Avatar. Lord Chaitanya took the form of Kurma Avatar when every single rasa simultaneously appeared in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the life of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we all know the story of Bhakti Siddhanta. When he was very young, the Jagannath Rath Yatra was going in front of their house. And normally, we know, this takes a few hours to get to Gundicha temple. But, of course, sometimes Lord Jagannath wants to stop. So he stopped in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house for 2 days. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for constant Harinam Sankirtan for 2 days. And then the second day, Bimala brought Bimala Prasad to Lord Jagannath, and he touched Lord Jagannath's feet, the garland came down. And then when he was 4 years old, he took the mango that was meant for the offering and said, and was chastised. For the rest of his life, he never had mango. He said he's an offender. The next recorded pastime of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is in Calcutta. When they're building their home in Calcutta, Bhakti Bhavan. In that process, in the excavation process, they unearthed a Kurma Salagram Shila. Kurma Dev Salagram Shila. And during those times, any Salagram Shila would be always given to someone born in the Brahmana family. But not only was it not given away, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave that Salagram Shila to his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's not, and was also not even an adult, he was just a child, to worship. And it's explained that when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started worshipping that Kurma Salagram Shila, he externally adopted Vaishnava Dharma, wearing tilak, chanting on mala. All the Vaishnava Dharma he externally started practicing from that moment when he started worshipping Kurma Salagram Shila. And that, the fact that he worshipped Kurmadev, his first deity, the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that for the same reason is a very, very profound statement of the significance of Kurma Avatar, and that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only Apavadrasheya, is not only non-different from Gayatri Mantra, is not only the most important scripture, not only chronologically the first spoken, but also contains the highest knowledge of bhakti, prema bhakti rasa. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? I have to actually leave in 3 minutes because I have a meeting at work.
Here we are, right? Yeah. Thank you so much. What was the circumstances in which Lord Chaitanya manifested the Kurma avatar?
Yeah, I was looking for that pastime this morning. I couldn't find it.
Oh.
But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries and the commentaries of the Acharya, they mentioned that they made reference to this pastime, saying that when all the rasas displayed simultaneously in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he assumed the form of Kurma Avatar.
Is it
Madhurila? Yeah, they said Chaitanya Charitamrita, but they didn't indicate a verse or a passage. I do remember there's a pastime, Prabhu, it is a pastime Chaitanya Charitamrita where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assumed the form of Kurma Avatar, right?
When Mahaprabhu was experiencing in the mood of Srimati Radharani, then he wanted to, like a mood comes, to embrace Krishna in extent, like a turtle, spread all the legs, and it goes. So Mahaprabhu's limbs almost separating from his body. It was very bewildering. It's in Raghunath Das Goswami's experiencing on the Mahaprabhu's ecstasy mood in Jagannath Puri. And also in the turtle represent the other side, that when Mahaprabhu or Srimati Radharani got Krishna and she embraced all the all the legs in the turtle body like shrinks in. Nobody sees.
I was thinking the same thing, how Lord Jagannath, his limbs are like turtle, right? He's brought inside.
Separation
yes. Right?
Yes.
So that's just like the Kurma avatar, yes. You know, the things.
Oh, you mean where the Zila is?
Yeah, where's when Lord Chaitanya?
It's in
the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can look it up in the index.
So, but Kurma avatar, it was stated that when the mountain, Mandara mountain, was scratched, massaging its back.
Right, that Kurmadev, I always remember that Kurmadev, he had a scratching like sensation, so it was, but he's also sleepy. That's when he was starting, when the Mandara Mandala started itching that scratch, he started becoming sleepy. Very sweet. Itchy and sleepy.
I got a real quick technical fetch.
You have to ask him here, he's a technical.
No, this is easy. It's not that. But, you know, just out of habit, I guess, you kept using the phrase scientifically proven. But technically, science, as a professional, it can't prove anything because it's always open to more evidence and a better explanatory hypothesis. So, science actually can't prove anything. Just saying.
Thank you, Prabhu.
I just wanted to say that I was thinking, since it's the end of the Bhagavatam, we should have had a party, you know?
Yes! Because,
but then I thought your class was like a party. It was just so ecstatic. So I just wanted to thank you.
By the way, this verse, do you know who quoted this verse a lot? Prabhupada. This Venerable